This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time now for Green Thumbs in Canterbury, out and about with the Canterbury Horticultural Society.
Ray and Lorraine from Canterbury Horticultural Society, out and about in Christchurch, and we're definitely deeply into autumn.
We definitely are, Ray, we definitely are. But I just need to say, it was your birthday on the 7th, so happy birthday to you for the 7th.
Thank you very much, Lorraine.
Anyway, yeah.
We all need to be reminded.
Yep. Yes, well, yep.
Very dry, isn't it?
Oh, very, very dry.
Yeah. Now, I was looking in the paper this morning and it was saying that we're now just a smidgen over half as much rain as we would normally have by now.
Wow.
Now, and I know we love these beautiful autumn days, but
yes.
I get a bit worried about, you know, what's happening. But never mind, no doubt we'll catch up.
Well, hopefully we'll get some rain soon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the sun's, of course, well above average. So, of course, things are still growing so well.
They are. And we haven't had the frost to kill them off either, have we?
Well, we've had frost, but it doesn't seem to worry the plants that much.
No.
And the soil temperatures are above normal too. So we can still keep thinking about planting our brassicas and things like that. And of course, you know, the good old broad beans that people love or hate. There's, you know, lots of different things you can do with broad beans.
I know you've had a good crop this year, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I haven't, because I'd love to have a good crop. But I've had ordinary beans. Oh, I cannot stop them growing. So quite a bit that can be done in the garden.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, and of course those wonderful leaves are falling.
Oh, they're all falling, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, to make them into mulch or...
Yeah, and compost.
And
wonderful
compost.
In your compost, yes. Yeah. And mulching your undergarden. And pruning?
Pruning your fruit trees and putting some oil on them to help protect from the insects and that.
Because the insects overwinter in the bark and under the leaves and things, so a bit of light oil spray would be, you know, you can get organic sprays so easily nowadays. And of course all the old fruit as well.
I mean,
this petrified fruit on trees that, you know, that gets, you miss it and they dry out, but that's where the insects live.
That's right.
So, yeah,
that's where they feed off, so it's good to get rid of them.
Absolutely right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And of course we've just, fortunately, because we thought it looked like it was dropping down below freezing or getting quite cool, we got the organic spray for our citrus fruit trees.
Oh, okay.
And we do that every year and we spray them and it's wonderful. It just protects them completely down to about -3.
Oh, okay.
And they get the sunlight.
Right.
Whereas if you cover them, the poor things don't get the sunlight either, so they look a bit sad by the end of winter.
So where do you get that?
Oh, we just buy it at one of the ordinary nursery shops.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think,
And it's called, what is it called again?
Well, it's just an organic spray for stopping frost damage to, and it needs to be shiny leaves. I mean, furry leaves and things it wouldn't work on.
But lemon trees and
citrus is really good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good tip. I'll have to do that myself.
It's very good. You need to do it every 6 weeks, so you do have to keep it up over the winter. But it certainly means
easier than having to. Oh, I was covering mine last year, and sometimes I didn't know it was going to freeze. And
right. And sometimes the frost cloth blows off overnight and things. So
Oh, cool.
So, what are you doing with your bulbs?
The spring bulbs, it's a good time to be getting them in before the end of the month, before everything gets too cold.
Mm.
Yeah, I did buy some tulips just recently, so I have to put those in. But I've got all my gladdies I just leave in over the year. I just leave in, actually, I leave them in the ground.
But yeah, I do that with irises. Those Dutch irises, I just leave them in the ground and they come on every year.
They're starting to come up already,
they're up quite a long way already.
Yes, are, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, I bought tulips the other day, and because I'm going away for a few days, I've put them in the fridge.
Me too.
There we are.
We're on the same page. And also it's a good time to be cutting geraniums and plants that are perennials that, you know, for the frost.
Doing some propagation.
And
cutting them back, yeah. But things are going well, aren't they? I mean, they're still flowering and the chrysanthemums are out and flowering really
beautiful
well.
At the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So it's lovely. So lots of things to be done in the garden.
Yes.
Oh, well, Lorraine, we've had a couple of very interesting guests this month, haven't
we? We have.
Yeah.
Yes, very interesting.
So I talked to Luke Martin from the Botanic Gardens. Luke has just recently been down to the sub-Antarctic Islands and gave us a little talk about the mega herbs, which sounds absolutely fascinating. So he'll be interesting to listen to.
Yes, when we have the talk in June at the kiosk, yes.
Yeah. And you've had a chat too?
Yes, I've had a chat to Graham Wilson. He's the president of Cacti and Succulent Society, and they meet once a month at the kiosk as well. So great things at the kiosk happening.
Yep.
Yep. Good morning. This morning we're talking with the president of the Cacti and Succulent Society, and his name is Graham Wilson. Welcome, Graham, and lovely to have you here to tell us all about cacti and succulents. So maybe you could tell us the difference between cacti and succulents to start with for some people who don't know much about them.
Okay, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to talk here. So, okay, I guess the easy way to remember it is that all or most cacti are succulents, but not all succulents are cacti. That's sort of the standard sort of saying. So it's basically the spines on the cacti that make it a cactus.
Right.
Yeah.
Those little pointy things that can do a bit of damage.
Which then sometimes confuses people because you've got the Euphorbia species, which is sort of looks like spines, but they're not. So sometimes people confuse the Euphorbias with cacti as well. But most cacti are succulent, so they retain the water. And have sort of similar growth requirements and that sort of thing. And the other thing, in the wild, they only grow in the Americas, with a couple of exceptions. So that's sort of the main sort of differences. Other than that, succulents will be a bit more sort of leafy in general.
Right.
And have, like your aloes with the spiky sort of leaves and that sort of thing, whereas most cacti have lost their leaves with a couple of exceptions. So most would be, your typical shapes, the columnar cacti, barrel sort of cacti and smaller button cacti. So, not huge surface areas like with leaves,
right,
which helps them store there.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they all mainly came from overseas, didn't they, to start with? So
yes.
They grew in really hot countries, so... Have they changed a lot since they've come here? Do you know?
No, I think they still have similar sort of growth conditions that they need, although, artificial conditions, I guess, can help them thrive a little bit more, better nutrition, so they probably grow a bit faster. And I guess anything that was sort of not as hardy would have died out in some of our conditions, so anything that was more frost-tolerant but got left out wouldn't have survived. Although, surprisingly, even some of the ones that you'd associate with the desert still sometimes get snow. So there's plenty of cacti that'll cope with frosts and snow.
Right.
Maybe not quite so many succulents because those, say come from South Africa, there's a lot of South African succulents and they won't be as frost tolerant.
Right.
Yeah.
And do we have the right soil variety, types to cope with them naturally or...?
In some areas, maybe, but generally you're going to want to add drainage into your soil and preferably not just sand. Things like pumice are expensive, but as long as it's sort of gravelly, pea gravel and that sort of thing, people will mix in with good soil. There's sort of always the debate around organic versus mineral, but, generally they grow in sort of high mineral environments and low organics anyway. So, yeah, it's sort of a bit of balancing, finding out what the different species likes, because some will actually handle quite high nitrogen, whereas other ones, high nitrogen will lead them to rot.
Right.
So you need to find a little bit out about the species that you're interested in.
For sure. And so you'd put a bit of compost in maybe or not? And like if you've got them in pots and that?
Not necessarily.
Right.
Probably a good starting point for most people would be to buy a cactus and succulent mix from Bunnings, whichever brand. Yeah, that's probably a good starting point because I've been, you know, sort of formulated to have good drainage in them and they don't need high amounts of compost and that sort of thing. And then you can add some, say, liquid feed fertiliser. Some people recommend tomato feed because it's not too high in nitrogen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, if in doubt, use half strength of something. Mm.
Right.
So how often would you feed them?
In the growing season, you can probably do it weekly or monthly.
Okay.
But sort of definitely back off late autumn and definitely before the frosts come in. You generally want to let your plants dry off a little bit before the frosts.
Mm.
And then over winter, give minimal amount of water. Outdoors ones won't need any water in general over winter.
Because it's not good to overwater them, is it?
No.
They don't like it.
No. No, you kill them with kindness in that way.
Right, yeah. Right. And so pests and diseases, do they suffer much from those?
Generally, they're fairly good. Talking cactus specifically, you know, if you're growing, well, any plant, I guess, grown in a conservatory or hothouse, you're going to run the risk of mealybugs. They're probably one of the biggest problems with cacti and succulents growing indoors. If they're growing outdoors in pots, less of a problem. And a little bit of chance of getting fungal infections and that on them, same with any plant.
Mm.
And, you know, you can treat the surface of it with a sulfur or copper fungicide. I have seen people recommend systemic fungicides, but I haven't actually got experience using those yet, and I'm not sure what's publicly available anyway.
Mm. Right. Mm. Right. So in some ways it might be good to join your society and come along, and people would learn a lot about the cacti and succulents at that. So it's a monthly meeting, isn't it?
Yes.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. And we certainly welcome new members and visitors to come along. So it's the last Monday of every month. And we're hosting it at the kiosk, thanks to the Canterbury Horticultural Society.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful venue, totally positive feedback on it. So each month we'll have a talk, a plant display with different sorts of plant. We have a theme each month, and we're trying to talk about things that sort of beginner to intermediate growers will find of use and encourage people into it as a hobby, I guess, yeah.
Mm. Cool.
So are they easy to propagate, you know, if you're just a home person?
Yes, easy to propagate and grow. So generally you can take a cutting pretty easily, and often you won't actually have to put them into water like you do with other plants. You'll just let them callus off on the bottom and then stick it on top of some soil or a growing medium, and it will grow roots and grow.
And I noticed it happens in the garden. You know, a leaf just falls off and you've suddenly got another little baby somewhere, haven't you?
Often people pull their entire succulent to pieces and end up with 100 more. So
That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, and they do multiply. I've got a few succulents and I've got them everywhere now because they're splitting them up and putting them here and there and everywhere.
Yeah, well, of course, with the current trend towards people going to smaller gardens and the people wanting to grow things in pots and people having nice things in their houses, succulents work quite well because you can bring them in and then put them back out again, can't you?
Yeah, and also for Canterbury with ongoing water restrictions, having some cacti or succulents in your garden or in your pot plant collection, less water usage too, so win-win, I think.
Yes. No, it's really nice.
Yes, and they do flower. Do they all flower?
Yeah, I think they'll all flower. Some a bit more reluctant to flower regularly, but especially with some of the cacti, they actually have quite stunning flowers and some of the hybrids and that, so people have sort of grown them over the years for the form, so the shapes of them. You'll get crested ones and mutated growth, which is actually quite desirable for some people, variegated growth, and the hybrid flowers, which people have now bred multicoloured flowers into them, whereas often lots of cacti just white flowers or just yellow, but now they've got multicoloured.
Yes, there's a lot to learn, isn't there, Lorraine?
There is a lot to learn, yes, really, really well. Okay, so thank you very much for coming along and talking to us, and maybe if people are interested, they can look on the website or come and see at the kiosk and find out more about joining your society.
Do you have a charge for them coming in?
A gold coin donation to come in, yes.
Okay, so thank you very much, Graham.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This morning I'm talking to Luke Martin. Luke's the curator of the New Zealand plants in the Botanic Gardens. But of course today we're not really talking to Luke about the Botanic Gardens, much as that would be very interesting, because Luke, you've had a recent adventure to the sub-Antarctic islands. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go on a trip with Heritage Expeditions down to the sub-Antarctic islands over the summer, over the Christmas period, to look at and collect some of the sub-Antarctic flora and see a lot of interesting fauna while I was at it.
It sounds really as though it could be quite an adventure. Where are the sub-Antarctic islands?
So the sub-Antarctic islands lie south of New Zealand, they're New Zealand territory. They're down in the Roaring Forties and the Furious Fifties. They're the southernmost territories of New Zealand.
Yeah, so they are nearer to Antarctica than to New Zealand.
Yeah, they're right down there in between, yeah.
Right down there, as you said, in the Roaring Forties and what, Fearsome Fifties. Yeah. What are some of the names of the islands that we might recognise?
So as you go south past Stewart Island, you get to the Snares Islands, which are a small chain of islands. We visited them first. We went down to Campbell Island, which is the furthest south, and the Auckland Islands, which are all down there in that sub-Antarctic group.
Yeah, it must be pretty fearsome down there. Does New Zealand administrate these islands?
Yeah, so they're managed as wildlife reserves by the Department of Conservation, and they've had previous occupation and military use in the past by the New Zealand government.
Yeah, and I guess the whalers and sealers used to probably have a bit of an input in there in the 1800s, yeah. So if you're going down there, I guess there's only one way by sea, but is that right?
Yeah, so we were on a Russian icebreaker. It's a New Zealand-owned Russian icebreaker that we went down on. It takes a couple of days to get down to Campbell Island. I was very lucky with the conditions. We were quite nice to us. It was almost unbelievable. The crew said it's not normally like this, so yeah, we were very fortunate.
So it's a strong stomach,
yeah,
if you, is needed. Yeah, okay. And does a New Zealand, when you say a New Zealand Russian icebreaker, sounds a bit of a sort of oxymoron, doesn't it? Do you mean that we bought an old Russian icebreaker?
Yeah, so it's a done up Russian icebreaking ship from the Northern Hemisphere. It actually does tours in the Southern Hemisphere in our summer, and then it actually goes up and does tours around the Siberian coast in their summer.
Oh, great. Yeah. So how does one get to go on this? Do you have to be invited?
So it's almost like an adventure cruise in a way. It's anyone can book it. Yeah, so it's the Heritage Expeditions. They lead the trip, so they're one of the main boats that are going down there. Even, you know, there was a member from the Meteorological Service was going down to service one of the weather stations down there, but he was coming on the cruise boat because that's the only boats going down there.
Oh, so one could say that was a perk of the job?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an adventure cruise, not a cruise. It is a rustic ship, yeah. In big seas.
Well, that sounds as though you did have an adventure. So when you got there, obviously you must have seen some pretty exciting things. Just tell us a little bit about the things you saw down there.
Yeah, so I was predominantly down there to collect and look at plants and observe them in their natural habitat. There's a whole range of endemic flora to the sub-Antarctics. Pleurophyllums, which are really large, pink-flowered mega herbs. So all the mega herbs are down there. Giant bulbinellas, Bulbinella rossii, and big ranunculus species, and ginormous snow tussocks. But then the whole place is inhabited just by albatross and seals and penguins and some really rare little endemic duck, flightless ducks, the Auckland Island teal and the Campbell Island teal, and Auckland Island snipe and Campbell Island snipe walking around. It's the main populations of royal albatross, and the Campbell Island albatross are down there. I saw six species of albatross on the trip. Mm. Crested penguins, Snares crested penguins, yellow-eyed penguins. Hooker's sea lions.
Oh, really? So they're just as tame as anything, I take it, were they? Like, you know, you could walk past them and they didn't scurry away or...
Yeah, they're just doing their thing. The albatross are just nesting around and some of them right beside the paths, and you've got to just sort of make your way around the sea lions and try and stay out of their way. And you're definitely in their world when you're down there.
Oh, great. The mega herbs, I'm quite fascinated by these. I mean, I have visions of ginormous triffid-like things. Are they really quite like that?
Yeah, absolutely. They're quite the anomaly, really, because they've got very showy flowers for New Zealand plants, which is interesting because down there there's not a huge range of pollinators. Mm. So no one's really all that sure why they have developed such showy flowers with such limited pollinators.
Well, what are the pollinators, you know?
Well, down there it's largely flies and a few moths and things. There's not really any butterflies or many sort of native bees or anything down there.
No. Is that just the climate would have put those, you know, sort of insects off?
Yeah, largely. Both the Campbell and Auckland Islands are former volcano craters, which are highly eroded, so they're extremely isolated, and all the vegetation that's on them has colonised them over a long distance dispersal, so insects making it down there is very slim.
Very slim by the sound of it. So how on earth have these plants got there over the years?
Yeah, well, it's quite incredible because Auckland Island has a lot more diversity being closer to New Zealand than Campbell does. But yeah, it's just like long distance wind dispersal mostly. You've got things like southern rata on Auckland Island, but it hasn't made it to Campbell. A lot of the grasses have obviously been there for a long time. They've formed into very distinct endemic species. The mega herbs have a distribution right through the sub-Antarctic into Australia and Macquarie Island also. So they've been down south for a while amongst the islands, yeah.
Why do you think they grow to be mega?
It's often quite cloudy down there. The rainfall isn't actually that high, but it's extremely regular. And so with the low light levels, possibly large leaves are good for photosynthesizing in such conditions. No browsing pressure or real reason not to, really. I mean, it's extremely windy, but it's also very lush.
Yeah, yeah. So they reach for the sky, sort of, do they?
Yeah, well, and spread out. Mm. Big leaves like hostas and things like that. Yeah, like large and round.
So what is the ground cover? Is it rocks? Is it, you know, snow? What is it? What is the ground cover?
Yeah, a lot of the soils are actually quite peaty, especially on Campbell Island.
Right.
Real build-up of plant matter from all the sort of tussock cover. And it doesn't really, because it's so cold down there, it doesn't break down as rapidly as a northern forest would, so it forms these deep peat layers.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's a very interesting sort of substrate, quite peaty. And yeah, a lot of trachophyllum cover, scrub is one of the main covers on Campbell.
So there is a lot of ground, things growing on it.
Yeah.
On
Campbell there's no trees, it's like it's scrub.
Right.
But it is all covered.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds interesting, doesn't it? I'm not sure I want to go down there, but sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
So what is so... Well, I suppose we've talked a bit about why it's so special, but because it's being managed by the Department of Conservation, it's obviously very special islands. Why have they decided they're special?
Yeah, well, they're just so unique. There's such a high level of endemic species that only occur in those areas, and a lot of them only occur on each island. So that just makes it completely unique amongst the world, really. The diversity and the range and the showiness of all of the sub-Antarctic mega herbs and the significant breeding colonies of so many different birds and seals just make it a really special place.
Yeah, it must be very special. You know, you were looking at the plants and collecting specimens, were you? Do you think that we can grow them to suit our conditions here, or would it be absolutely impossible to to have them here?
It is very difficult to grow them here. Some of the species have been grown in New Zealand, on the mainland. Invercargill, Queen's Park Gardens, they have probably the best sub-Antarctic collection in the country, being the furthest south. Mm-hmm. Dunedin has a few good plants too. Stilbe carpa, the big sub-Antarctic cabbage, that can be grown in New Zealand. No one's ever grown Pleurophyllum outside of the sub-Antarctics that I know of, which is a shame because it's one of the showiest ones.
Is this a challenge for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in the future management plan of the gardens, there is an area earmarked for a sub-Antarctic house, which would be a chilled house. Mm-hmm. Tasmanian Botanic Gardens has one where they showcase some plants from Macquarie Island. So you would need a facility like that to really pull it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I can see a gleam in your eye, so you never know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, you're going to be talking at All About Gardening in the first Monday night of June and the Tuesday morning. Are you going to have some slides to show us of some of these wonderful things?
Yeah, absolutely. So, my talk will just be a walkthrough of my trip, really, and just photos of the plants and the animals I encountered along the way.
Oh, well, that's fantastic, Luke. And so thank you so much for popping in and having a chat to us today. And I'm really looking forward to seeing your presentation. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
That's quite all right. Thank you.
Well, Lorraine, that winds up another month.
I know.
Yeah, so that's great. Yes. So for listeners, if you have a look on the website for the Canterbury Horticultural Society, there are lots of things coming up, lots of really good workshops, lots of good courses for learning about horticulture in general. So keep your eye open, and if there's anything you want to know or anything, if suggestions that you'd like to make, you can get in contact on Plains FM on 365 7997 or info@plainsfm.org.nz.
Awesome.
Yes, another month.
We'll see you next month.
Okay.
Bye.